The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Gavlik, who's unmarked as he streaks away into an open goal.
Hit the boundary line.
Oh, the post is broken. Matthews hit it.
Boy, oh boy, wow-wee. He shoots towards goal. What more can you say?
Hello and welcome back to the Herald Sun Footy Podcast. I'm Mick Warner and no Mark Robinson this week, coming in as the medical sub, the great Glenn McFarlane. How are you, Macca?
Yeah, g'day, Michael. I wouldn't say great, but thanks for having me. Gee, there's a bit going on at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, well, we've got Victoria extending its lockdown. South Australia's going into lockdown. New South Wales in their fifth week of a lockdown. And now, in terms of a football season, the walls are closing in again on the AFL. And I sort of feel like we're in a worse position in terms of logistics, getting games on, than we were last year when we lost those 82 days. But we went to Queensland and had a bit of a plan. Now we're really scrambling.
We are. There's no doubt about that. There's 45 games, obviously, to get through till the end of the home and away season. Then it starts again through the finals. We had that safe haven, didn't we? We felt like we had that safe haven. And even South Australia was an option and WA to a degree last year. Whereas this year, the walls are sort of caving in, Mick, aren't they? That's the concerning point. Are we going to get to a period? I mean, the AFL at the moment is saying play on at all costs. They're really not that keen on hubs. They want to play on at all costs. Do you think we're going to get a period where we'll actually have a pause in the season?
No, I don't. I think they're going to, by hook or by crook, they'll play games. What we can't afford is COVID to break out in Queensland. That would be a disaster. It seems to be a bit of the saviour, the Metricon Stadium again, and hopefully the Gabba. But I think they'll just have to keep persevering. The issue that I've got is twofold. One is crowds. You know, will we have any crowds at the football again this season? I don't know. I mean, WA is the other state we haven't talked about. They seem to be COVID-free. And the other one aspect, which also goes into the grand final, which we'll talk about later, but the other one is integrity. Do we, at what point, you know, with those Giants players being taken out at the last minute, Toby Green can't play again this weekend. I think we can live with it in an integrity sense so far, but you know, what if you got 10 players had to miss out on a prelim or something? You know, what's the tipping point?
Yeah, integrity and COVID don't really go together. It was always going to be a problem. We did say last year that there was going to be an asterisk on the season. I'm sure you as a Tiger fan wouldn't say that at all at the moment, and I'm sure whoever wins this year will be exactly the same. But you're right, it gets to a stage where if it does happen to be 10 players come out of a preliminary final or something like that, it would be, you know, it would be a terrible look for the game. But I just don't see what the alternatives are at the moment. We're going to have to live with this for a period of time. And, gee, I think if we can get through this season somehow without a big issue like that happening, it's going to be tough. But if they can do it and get through, well, hopefully, we said this last year, but hopefully next year we won't have these problems.
Well, with only, I think, 11% of Australians fully vaccinated, yeah. Macca, having said that, Canada were in that situation, and then they've zoomed up to 49%. So hopefully by March next year we'll be, you know, herd immunity, whatever it is. But the extension of all this is the finances of the game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Big meeting today that was meant to be up at Nagambi. Don't know if you've ever been there. I was due to go up there for my mum's
70th. It's horse country, Michael. It's one of the most amazing places, a thoroughbred country.
So you have been there?
Of course, only for horses, but I'm sure there's other things up there that are good too.
Is there a track you can bet at up there?
No, it's more the farms up there. There's a couple of amazing farms. It's black caviar country up that way. Oh, so,
okay. Well, very good. That's where all the AFL CEOs and the AFL executives were meant to head up this weekend to talk about some of the big issues. Now, doing it over Zoom, as the whole world is, and it's all about the finances. Last year, we know the AFL miraculously announced a $25 million loss through all that. Having said that, they sacked a lot of people. A lot of people lost their jobs and left the industry, not just at AFL House, but across the competition. They had that $600 million draft facility from the banks that they never really had to rely on, the line of credit, which was up against the Marvel Stadium asset. You wonder whether they might have to draw down on that.
Yeah, I think they probably will at this stage. Clubs are bleeding, Mick. They really are. You know that as well as anyone. And it just, you know, in a situation where we're looking at potentially the last, you know, last five games without crowds in Victoria, and it just hurts and hurts and hurts. And even the seriously wealthy clubs that, you know, had basically safeguarded their future, no one saw anything like this coming along. So it's going to have massive implications for what the players, I would think, are going to be paid next year. They already know what they're going to be paid this year. And how does it affect the soft cap? You know, we always felt that there was going to be a bit of an easing of the soft cap. Is that something that the AFL now turns around and says, that's not going to happen now? We can't afford to be in a situation like that. And we've already had a few people like saying, you know, the senior coaches are well overpaid. You know, are we going to, in the future, are we going to have $1 million per season senior coaches, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
The best, I
don't think you'll see savage cuts of players or coaching staff. They're smaller enterprises. The AFL itself, I think all their executives are back on full tote odds this year, but there's just less staff, and a lot of the coaches are earning the same money this year as pre-COVID. But you know, there might be a point where the finances are bitten into so significantly, but you know, I can't see the players, for example, taking a 20% pay cut next year. I don't know.
Could it possibly be 10%, do you think, Michael? Do you think, is that something that they may have to look at? They won't want to do it, far from it.
Well, again, that requires, I think, full transparency of, okay, we'll open up the books. They went through this last year. They go through it every year with the CBA. But, you know, actually show us the full extent of your finances. The TV money's crucial here. If you keep the show going, that 60% of the money comes from the TV stations, Seven and Fox. And so that's why people are saying, well, let's just have weeks off. Yeah, once you stop, the tap turns off. So they'll find a way. That you never underestimate the strategic capabilities of the AFL, but it'd be a bloody nightmare at the moment trying to work absolutely out fixtures.
Yeah, and with that, like having spoken to them on the weekend and having written a piece where I mentioned about crisis talks, well, about keeping the season afloat, well, I was told in no uncertain terms that it's been crisis talks for the best part of 18 months now, and so they just move from one situation to the next. They just get something locked in, Mick, and then all of a sudden, you know, the flare-up in South Australia means we've got issues with games this week, and they're, you know, not going to be fans there this week in that regard as well. So it just continues to roll on. And you're right about the finances. I think their point on about playing on at all costs, and doesn't matter whether the crowd's there or not. They would love the crowd there. Yeah. To have no crowd there, at least you've got the game going on. So the money is coming in from a TV perspective. And who knows what's going to happen. If we delay the season, who knows what might happen in October, November.
What's your thoughts on the grand final?
Oh, I desperately wanted to be at the MCG. I just felt like, I was a bit heartbroken. It was the first grand final. This, I'm going to show my age here. It was the first grand final that I'd actually missed since 1970. I'm just trying to think now. I went to the 77 draw. It was the first grand final I've missed since the 1980 grand final. I can't remember who played in that game. I actually do. It still seared into my mind. But that's the last grand final I missed before last year. And it's just such a great thing for Melbourne and for people, you know, who are fortunate enough to be able to go along. And I don't know. The crowds are going to be an issue now with what's happened with the Delta strain. But if we could get 45,000 to 50,000 at the MCG, would you prefer that? or would you prefer 60,000 in Perth?
Geez, you're being ambitious if you can see 50,000 at the MCG.
I had 25 written here, and then I thought I'm trying to talk Daniel Andrews into letting a few more get in, but I'm thinking it might be 25. What do you reckon?
Well, there is a contract that the AFL
has
a contract with the Victorian government to host the game at the MCG till 2057 in exchange for that $225 million renovation at Marvel Stadium and a few other things thrown in. So whether they want to stick to that contract, don't know. If Perth was available with 60, I'd probably be going there. It might be that we have to make the decision in, you know, preliminary final week just to find a stadium that could have crowds. But you can't guess with COVID, Macca. We could have the whole country shut down by then. And if that's the case, I guess would you have to just play the game in front of an empty crowd?
You would. How flattening would that be? That would just be a lockdown grand final would just be something that we've never even thought could possibly happen. So fingers crossed that we can, you know, at this stage with Victoria, if we can get out of lockdown as we're expected in a week's time and slowly get a few people back to the footy, I think they're going to be very cautious, Mick. There's no doubt the government will be cautious about how many people they can get in. But if we can have a little body of work, I think they're even considering there may not be too many crowds until the finals. I think that was part of their thought over the weekend. But if we can then build that up in the finals, I'd love to see the grand final at the MCG. It did feel a bit weird last year, I got to say. It wouldn't have felt weird for you winning yet another premiership in a procession as you usually do, but I'd love to see it back at the MCG this year.
Well, who is going to win it this year? Because Dusty's gone down with the kidney, which is pretty ordinary. He's got a laceration of the kidney, which is like a cut rather than a bruise. So that the suggestion there is that you have to sit out a few months, because if you get another knock, then you could rupture it. And, you know, we saw what happened there with Tom Lonergan and Sammy Newman. The Tigers got their game back against Brisbane, although Brisbane have been pretty poor last couple of weeks, so I put a bit of an asterisk on that. But losing Martin, they can't win it without him, in my opinion. So who does that leave?
That's a good point. I don't think they can win it without him. To me, I've been on Geelong all the way through. I really like the way they're building. And I think it's going to come down to an experienced team. Like, there's so many different hurdles to sort of get through. It was proven last year. The two most experienced teams last year got through to a grand final. And so I think Geelong, there's plenty of upside still in Geelong.
How did they get Isaac Smith for Knicks?
Unbelievable.
Like, he's a gun. Could he win their best and fairest?
You shake your head, don't you, and think he is an absolute gun. We all talked about how good Jeremy Cameron was going to be, you know, and he's clearly had some issues, and if he comes back, they're going to be so much better. But Isaac Smith has been absolutely outstanding. He was exactly what they needed. So I think, I don't know about you, but I think Geelong's the team to beat. I thought that before round one. Really impressed with the Bulldogs. I think the Bulldogs, I don't know what to make of Melbourne. I've still got Melbourne in my mix. They just seem like they need, you know, from a headspace perspective, they seem like they need a challenge.
I don't buy into that. I mean,
you don't?
Don't you bash up the inferior teams? And
good teams do, but I don't know that Melbourne's a really good team yet, and that's a problem. I mean, even Clayton Oliver was talking about that after the game. He was saying, oh, maybe we need to play a good side. I'm like, that's not the right mindset I would have thought that you would have had going into that game, because I still can't believe though they didn't win that game. The wild card is Sydney for me. I know you're going to laugh at me here,
but I
love the way the Swans are building as a group. We know why John Longmire didn't, you know, take the North Melbourne job on a few years ago when they threw bucket loads of cash at him. They are building so well, Sydney, and the challenges that they've had. If they could win a flag this year, which is unlikely still, it would be one of the great grand final wins you've ever seen, being away from home and the emotion around it. You can see with John Longmire crying on the weekend after the game, and he's a pretty hard man, Horse.
What was that all about?
Well, I think it was just the emotion of leading into the game, where he had to, you know, certain players had to be pulled out of the game at the last minute. They're away from their family, and they have been for a number of weeks with no end in sight. That's, they may not, you know, they're obviously hoping to get their families together in a hub sort of scenario, but they've been away for so long. I give them a chance, Mick. I really do. I don't know what to make about Port and Brisbane. I really don't. They're the two teams that enigmas in my mind. So
I've got it down to the Lions have lost. You know, they lost Rayner at the start of the year. They've lost
Hipwood,
Marcus Adams. You know, that. But and then Lachie Neal left the track today with a shoulder. I don't know the extent of that. So but I think they'll come again. I do. Port Adelaide, I don't think we'll win it. So no, they're race in four, I reckon.
Race in five, do you think, or in four?
Five,
I think we've got to probably keep
just Brisbane in. Before we go to the first break, the draw, it just does my head in. Every year, the most predictable, boring conversation. Yep. Oh, let's get rid of the draw and bring in. I couldn't believe, in finals, we've had to bring in extra time because of logistics and scheduling. I understand that. It was a shame that even the grand final day, but, you know, I can see if you're coming from Fremantle to the G, then maybe it's not fair. So I could cop finals, but home and away, why do we need to get rid of the draw?
It's the most tiresome conversation, and I completely agree with you. No,
it's the second most tiresome conversation.
Night grand final?
Yes.
Night grand final. It's just so tiresome. And you get, if you believe in a draw, which I seriously believe in a draw, if you're not good enough to win over that allotted period of time to get the full 4 points, you don't deserve the full points of a game. But also, I love the emotion, Mick, of a draw. It's sort of like an empty feeling. Yeah. And I think that's something unique and it's really good. What are we going to do with Test cricket? Are we going to say, well, we don't have draws anymore? We're not going to have draws anymore in Test cricket?
It's vandalism.
It's ridiculous. It is.
Why do they think they have the right to change all of these things just because they're the current custodians?
Yeah, I cannot believe it. I'm with you. I wouldn't have changed the grand final. I know that sounds pro-Victorian centric for me, but I actually wouldn't have changed. I can definitely understand it in a final series. And some of the great games I've been to, strangely enough, have been draws. Penalty shootout scenario. Really? Do we really want that a part of our game? I don't. I think it's crazy. I'm with you. I'm 100%. I can't believe we're in total agreement with this.
All right, let's go to the break. And when we come back, we want to have a Glenn McFarlane history lesson. Now, Macca, we've got you in as the medical sub. So I want to give our listeners a bit of a history lesson into the career of Glenn McFarlane. When we know you're a Collingwood man, your grandfather played in 5 premierships for Collingwood, so you can be forgiven for being a Collingwood supporter. Tell us about your journey into sports journalism.
Well, Mick, I was actually I was cut down in my prime as a footballer by a chronic lack of ability. cut down in my prime. No, I played a fair bit of junior footy as a kid and was with Collingwood under 17s for a period of time and trained with the 19s, but not fit enough or good enough. And not many of that
you
group went on.
Had some ability if you played.
A little bit, not a little bit, but no.
You would have been like a bullocking defender, wouldn't you?
No, well, actually, I was, you're going to laugh, I was probably in a different weight bracket then. I was probably playing sort of wing midfield scenario, half forward scenario. Never played defence until I went to Collingwood. They put me at centre-half back, and any wonder I didn't make it. I thought defence was the thing that, you know, kept you inside the ground rather than
very good.
Rather than that. So I didn't last too long at Collingwood. I was there for a little short period of time, and it didn't quite work. And I always wanted to, from the time I was a little kid, wanted to be a journalist. And my grandfather, who played in those 5 premierships in the famous Collingwood machine, as it was, beating Richmond in 3 of those 4 grand finals, he died well before I was born. So I started writing to a lot of his teammates and ended up doing a book on the machine with Michael Roberts. So basically wanted to get into sports journalism and did a degree in, not in sports journalism back then, but in something else. And somehow, I don't know how, but fluked a job at The Sun. I actually applied for every job around Australia and I couldn't get anywhere other than in my home state. So I was pretty happy with that. That was end of 1989, Mick, and my first year of covering footy was the first year of the AFL in 1990.
Yes, and we know what happened that year, unfortunately.
Great year. What a year to start with a Collingwood 32-year premiership drought breaking.
It was big. Did you go to Victoria Park that night?
I did. I had a great night. I covered the game, which was just unbelievable. I was in the rooms, lucky enough to be after it. And the great Scott Palmer, who you know looked after me in the early years, sent me along to the old Southern Cross. I don't know if you remember the Southern Cross. Yeah. Where all the big functions were at in Melbourne. And I went along to their premiership dinner and had a bit of fun there. And then walked out a long way. It took me ages to get back to Vic Park. And seriously, I've never seen anything like it until what we saw on Swan Street only a few years ago.
Magnificent. Now, always hard to put you on the spot. What was the biggest story, deadline story you've covered?
There's plenty of big stories. I'm not trying to talk myself up. Far from it. I mean, there's plenty of stories you cover over the journey from, you know, Jim Steins' blueprint for Melbourne or retirements of Crawford or Shane Crawford or you know, Sam Mitchell that you break or things like that. But as far as deadline goes, it's covering games that people would not really appreciate how hard it is to cover a game, particularly back in the day when we didn't have computers at games. We had copy takers. So we would ring through the story to a copy taker who would type it into the phone. And the biggest one, I reckon, from my memory was the 1996 preliminary final. And Essendon were well in front and
SCG.
SCG, Essendon versus Sydney, the centenary year. And I'm thinking this is, you know, Essendon's just sailing away to a win. And then all of a sudden the Swans came with a big roar. So I had to completely restart the story when Tony Lockett gets his hands on the ball and kicks the most famous behinds in footy.
Who kicked it to him?
Good question. I'm trying to remember. God, gee, you're testing me now. I'll find that out. What's that?
Was it Creswell or was it?
It might have been. Yeah.
I remember is Rodney Eade, his coach, said that he said something about the kick because he was long on that boundary and he centered it, didn't he?
He was a long way out, Plugger. And the drama behind it, I spent a bit of time in Sydney that week, was Plugger was carrying an injury and was struggling to kick any more than about 35, 40 metres. So there was a significant doubt on him actually making the distance in the minds of some of the Swans medicos. But Plugger thought, stuff this, I'm going for it, and he did. And I'll tell you, that night was one of the most extraordinary nights, I reckon, in Sydney's history, in footy history. All the great old Swans players from the past were there and they ended up drinking on the ground, I reckon, till about 3 a.m. The players were long gone, but it was, we're out in the ground and in rooms and out on the ground. All the old greats went out in the ground and it was a big night. But unfortunately, good on North Melbourne breaking through, but the Swans were pretty brave. And go back and look at Plugger. He kicked 6 goals in a losing grand final the week after.
The night Sydney finally got the point about football was the headline in the paper the next day. Very clever.
Very good.
Solitary point that they got in by. I think Matthew Lloyd played in that game.
Matthew Lloyd ended up going to hospital. The Bombers would have struggled to field a team the week after. I think, I can't remember, it wasn't a kidney, but it was some sort of spleen injury, I reckon.
Yeah.
And they had about 6 or 7 guys out. And you talk to Sheeds now, and he's one of the great humans of all time, Sheeds, but that spray he gave the Essendon team after that preliminary final loss apparently would have torn paint off the wall. So we were
denied a Essendon North grand final in 96 and in 99, of course, the preliminary, what was Trevor Grant famously called that? Preliminary ship or something, didn't he?
That's right. Well, that was. I was sports editor at the time of that, and we'd gear everything up for a victory, for an Essendon victory. And so we had to quickly reshape everything. And I think there was one small thing in the first edition mentioned about because it was the same night as the day as the state election, the Jeff Kennett. So Rod Nicholson, I think, was covering a bit of footy for us at the time, and we had to reshuffle. All of us back in the office had to reshuffle so much because we'd planned. It was the greatest living certainty ever.
They're $1.18 Essendon to win that game. I still reckon it's the greatest upset I've seen of a high stakes game. Like I can't think of one.
Yeah,
it was. Just...
I think probably the. I think you're probably right. Probably the greatest upset of all time was the 1958 Grand Final, Collingwood upsetting Melbourne, who had won X. Were about to break four in a row. But as far as finals go, that was massive, wasn't it? The Essendon loss, and you know, really, obviously, set sowed the seeds of that, you know, amazing 2000 season the year after.
Yeah, but I always think that Essendon should have got more than one premiership with that powerhouse team. And it sort of puts the dynasty teams into perspective a bit, that you can be a good team, but to get the job done is another thing. And Essendon, I know Lloydie says he still has sleepless nights over the fact that he's not a dual premiership player at least.
And that's incredible. You think of him as being that, even though he's not, you know, because he's such a remarkable player over a long period of time. It is, you make a really good point. It goes to show, and we've been blessed in recent years and this century to have, you know, great dynasty teams, and we're in the midst of one of them now. But they're so hard to win, and that's multiple flags. Like Collingwood win the 2010, they almost lost it. Collingwood win the 2010 Grand Final Premiership, the replay, and you think they're one of the youngest teams in, you know, in recorded history to win a grand final, and they don't win another one. They're so hard to win, and that's
in,
why.
In the early part of 2011, you were almost one of the best teams I've ever seen. You were just smashing teams. There was a game where you were about 40 points down in the twilight game against the Bulldogs that year, and you just ran them down. I thought, geez, they're an absolute Monty to go back to back. Having said that, Geelong did beat you four times that year.
Yeah, they did. And that's
still felt as though you sort of blew yourselves up a bit.
Well, there was a few things going on internally, as we know, with the coaching handover, which is interesting given what's going on at Hawthorn at the moment. But you're right. That 2011 year, that early part of that year, I think they were playing a lot better footy than they were in 2010. And if you talk to the players, they would acknowledge that same thing. But Geelong just had this thing on them. And don't forget, Collingwood were 18 points in front in the second quarter, at stages of that second quarter of that grand final against Geelong. And go back and look at what the score was at three-quarter time. It was really tight at three-quarter time, and then Geelong just went bushka.
Bartel kicked that snap from the boundary just before half-time that gave them. But it's a good segue. You talk, because it reminds me of Mick Malthouse's comments recently, where I had to laugh, where he talked about succession plans and Gary Pert wearing the carpet out, walking past his office into Nathan Buckley's area. They tend to not work. What's your latest read on the Hawthorn situation and also at your club, Collingwood, on the coaching situations?
Well, just on Hawthorn, you're right. It's a really strange. It's one of the more extraordinary media briefings I've been to. I was lucky enough to be out there, and I think we just all looked at each other thinking initially that, gee, Clarko's on board with this. This is maybe his decision. And as the media briefing progressed, we realised he's not on board with this. He's a little bit blindsided by some of this. So it is going to be fascinating to see. I thought after that Fremantle loss that this just cannot happen next year. But it's going to take a lot for it not to happen, given the money that Clarko is actually on. And if you believe the rumblings behind the scenes, there's a lot to play out before, you know, we see Alistair Clarkson coach Hawthorn next year. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens. And having spent a bit of time with Sam Mitchell, I was lucky enough to do his book. He's an intriguing character who is just so driven, has always wanted to be the great coach that he is. I was sort of hoping the Pies were going to have a nibble at him. So I think he's going to be an outstanding coach, but see what happens going forward with him. Obviously, you've got the off-field stuff, and you certainly know as much, and if not more than I do, about that. But the coaching scenario, all we can believe at the moment is they're doing what Collingwood's probably never done in its history, and that's running a full process into trying to find out who the next coach is. This has been a club that's basically handpicked coaches all through its career. So I'm really keen to see which way this coaching search goes.
What do you think of Paul Lucuria when he said that they plan to win five of the next 20 premierships? I think they also said that there was 92 candidates for the for the job. You,
yeah. You I'm trying to work out whether you and I were in those 92.
Well, Kevin Bartlett was pretty angry that he wasn't given a call.
But, see, KB almost went and played for Collingwood when he was having a blue with Richmond. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. When he was having a blue with Richmond, this is before 1980. With Richmond, Graham Richmond and Richmond as a footy club. There was a bit of a feeling that he might have at some stage gone to another club, and I know that Collingwood were interested, but it all got resolved, unfortunately, because then he came out a few years later and destroyed Collingwood in that 1980 grand final. But as far as two premierships and how many years did he say?
Five premierships in 20 years.
Yeah, well, let me just tell you, I'd take one. Having been alive, so I won't tell you how old I am, Mick, but I'm getting old.
If you're anything near 63, that the stat is that you've won two premierships in 63 years.
So in my lifetime, I'm 52. So in my lifetime, we've won two flags. So it'd be great to say you could win five in 20 years, but to be honest, it's just a word. It's just language, and I hope they can build towards winning a premiership in that time. That would be great. Mind you, think about when we were all laughing at Brendan Gale, when Brendan Gale was putting a point on how many flags Richmond would win and how many memberships they would sell over the years, and it's proven to be eerily correct. So if Liquor is anywhere near correct with that, I'll take that. And, gee, the coach who's going to be coming in has got a bit of pressure on him then, hasn't he?
Mac, when we come back, I want to talk to you about the young superstar Sam Walsh. So, Mac, Sam Walsh was there were a few in the media who said that Carlton got it wrong in recruiting him at pick one, but I think they've had their accreditations revoked. You won't hear from them again because this kid is his gut running, he's kicking goals, he's got heart. I still don't quite put him in the Petraka, Martin, Big Bull category, Dangerfield, Pfeiffer, but he's a different kind of player to them. But he's only still, I think he's still eligible for the Rising Star, isn't he, with his age? Not that he'll win, he's played too many games. But suddenly you're looking at Carlton and thinking, I know they only beat Collingwood, but they've got a lot of talented players.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if they could get Chera in there as well too, Mick. Like, he has been outstanding.
How big's their salary cap, mate?
Well, that's a good point. They've got most of it's in their back line too, isn't it? They obviously need a bit of work there. So the salary cap's never been a problem for the Blues in a lot of ways, has it, over the journey? But no, they do things by the book now. But just on Walsh, this might be ridiculous, you think about this century and players of this century. I don't know that many players have played as better first 56 games this century than Sam Walsh. He has been outstanding. He's clearly their best player and is in for a massive pay increase. That's the next one they'll start. They've been pretty good, the Blues. They've been able to work through a lot of these players in terms of contract with Big Harry and with Cripper as well. But certainly if they can lock in Sam Walsh, which they will, I think it's all well going forward. Maybe Chris Judd probably had a better first 56 games, you reckon, Mick, than Sam Walsh, but it'd be line ball.
Yeah, I had this chat with Robbo, though, a couple of weeks ago, and you remember that famous game they talk about, Judd exploded up at the Gabba and kicked like four or five goals, just moving away from stoppages about 400 kilometres an hour. And that was actually his 32nd game. So, but maybe, Walsh's last 20 have been off the charts, haven't they? So
they have. And that goal he kicked on the weekend, just, if it put the full stop on Collingwood, but it was just, and you look at the how he was able to run away from Steel Sidebottom in that his gut running is extraordinary.
I've always liked Jack Silvani as a player. I've thought that he could make it as a player for a long time, and that was just such a great effort from him in with the circumstances of Surge. And Harry is going to win the Coleman. I mean, he was quiet, kicked four. He's now got 50 goals, which is quite sad in itself that we're five rounds out from the end of the home and away and 50's leading the Coleman. But Jack Riewoldt is probably the only one who can rein him in. Can you believe that? 42.
Unbelievable, Jack. How good a player is he, Mick? I don't need to tell you, but what he did on the weekend was just extraordinary, wasn't it? He rises to big occasions, and I think he's only one of three guys to kick six or more goals in a 300 game, which is amazing. So I hope Harry wins it, because I just think he's the way of the future and for the Blues, and he's had a great year. Comes up against his brother this week, which will be interesting, the two of them together.
Will they play on each other? Or?
No, probably not. May not. They may not play on each other, but there'll be plenty of banter, I would have thought. They'll be in the room together, and so we'll know that they're not one player and that as well. But he's been great, Harry. He's been sensational. And not to discount, Ben's had a good year as well. So as far as twins go, we've been blessed with twins in a lot of ways, haven't we?
What I liked about it, Harry's game on the weekend, though, was he wasn't kicking those snaps. He kicked a couple, but he actually slotted a few from 40 out on tight angles. And so if he can start actually kicking like that Matthew Lloyd, just, you know, regularly from all angles, then he will be a devastating player. So speaking of devastating players, the big Bud, he had some quiet moments in recent weeks, but his best is still electrifying. And he's only 19, I think, off the big 1,000, which we'll probably never see again.
Yeah, I know. Amazing. I still feel a bit heartbroken that Matthew Lloyd didn't get there. I really wish Matthew Lloyd had got to the 1,000. But, you know, and this could be the last one. We said that with Matthew Lloyd, but not to know that, you know, we get a once-in-a-generation player come along like Bud. And just to see his evolution as a player, as a person over the journey has been quite remarkable. So, and this is probably one of the biggest stories of the year that probably hasn't been as reported as it should be. He was gone, Mick, I reckon. Body-wise, he was gone. Everyone laughed at the contract, said he's not going to see out the contract. He'll absolutely see out this contract next year, and he might put an extra year on top of it as well. I know that's a million miles away right now, but he's got his body right, and he's playing great footy. And if you could see a Swans flag coming up in the next couple of years, what a way to go out and finish that contract with a flag this year or next year.
So is this the last of the nine this year, is it?
No, next year is the last of the nine. So he's got one to go. But there were people sort of, you know, last year when his body and the year before when his body was letting him down was saying that he won't get through. He's absolutely going to get through, and he'll clearly play on next year and see out that contract. But I'm just saying, I wouldn't be surprised if he didn't play one more after that.
We certainly make big calls, even on Saturday night, or was it Friday night, would Koch was playing a bit better, a lot better actually, you know, and you think, geez, we make some big stupid calls just week after week, and hopefully they never get dug out and played again, because you're very quick to write off champions.
Absolutely. He's an absolute champion, Cochin, as well. I cannot believe
I fell into it a bit because I was interested in the coach saying he needs to play another role, and I didn't know what he meant, where he could play. But
maybe he just means they need to protect him a little bit more. He has been that battering ram for so long, and he's such an intelligent player. I'm sure he can, and he's got one more year to run on his contract as well, Mick, so it'll be fascinating to see whether he plays on beyond that. But he's still a relatively young footballer in a lot of ways. So what is he, 31? Is he 31 at the moment?
Yeah, but his body, correct, you know, with his hammies and that. But one last one, Mac, before we go. Who is going to replace Steve Hocking, who, by the way, gee, what about the timing? All hands on deck at AFL House, and he got out last Thursday. He's going to play golf till October, November. And then, bang, COVID, the Delta strain hits, and they probably wish they still had him in there to help work it all out. But who do you want as the next football operations boss?
Now, I really wanted you to ask me this question because I've just finished a book and I really enjoyed it. So my candidate for the Steve Hocking role is Michael Warner. I'd love to see Michael Warner go in because, Mick, you and I, let's face it, you and I think a lot, very similar lines. Our politics are very different. We won't go into any of that, but our footy thoughts are pretty similar. And so I like the fact that you don't want a night grand final, or you don't want extra time for draws, and you're straight down line. You don't want stupid goal squares, you know, stupid elongated goal squares as well. So I'm tipping you.
It won't be me, but you know.
No.
One name that I heard that Jimmy Bartel basically said that he'd be interested in the job on 3AW.
I think he'd be outstanding, Jimmy Bartel. I think he makes enormous sense when he talks. I think he'd be really good. I'm surprised that he said he'd be interested, but I think he makes a lot of sense. He knows the game and knows on and off the field, and he's a great. I don't know. I think he's a great connector with people, Jimmy, where, you know, that may not have been Steve Hocking's greatest asset as far as connecting with people at all levels in that sense. And so I think Jimmy would be great.
But he won't get it. I mean, as
he won't.
He didn't go to the right school. So
neither did I. So I think I've missed out as well. But do you think Brad Scott, where's Brad Scott's head at the moment in terms of coaching or administration, do you think, at the moment?
He's the one that makes the most sense to me. The Correct. Only thing that I'd be concerned about with him is whether he's anti getting rid of rotations or not, because to me, the coaches as a rule love rotations. If they had their way, they'd be back to 150 a game. And that, to me, as I've said it and bores people, they've probably already switched off. That's the issue. That's the disease eating the game alive. Yep. If you got rid of it and got it back to 18 versus 18, maybe had 10 per quarter for strategy or injury. But I don't know whether – I'd like to know what his thoughts are on that. But
I think he'd be a good candidate. Yep. I really do think he'd be a really good candidate for it.
Yeah. But anyway, we'll find out. I saw that Chris Davies, the highly regarded Port Adelaide football boss, is not keen on the job. So
it
would be a tough time to go to AFL House, but it's an important job, and you've done an important job filling in today, Macca.
Good on you, Mick, and it'll keep rolling along. There's all sorts of talk about Port Adelaide and Adelaide potentially coming to Melbourne too. Wouldn't that be interesting? So anyway, we'll see what happens. It's just going to keep rolling along, this COVID stuff, isn't it?
Well played. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Mick.